Chapter 8. Hours passed before the last of the enemy was beaten back. Even in defeat, many of them still fought on, bitterly contesting every last tract of ground. More Eternals fell in that fighting, brought down by the savagery of the blood-crazed horde. But Vandus came among them again, his strength now unmatched, and the last resistance was broken. Kul never returned. Of Vec, the Flayer, there was no sign, nor of the beast he had enslaved. Skullbrand, bereft of the leadership of his master, was hammered back into the west, and with him went the last of the realm of chaos, melting back into the earth in rippling waves of oily smoke. Phalanxes of liberators pursued the defeated horde, only halting when the dangers of becoming isolated became too great. Then they set the banners of Azir to fly on the ruined walls and mounted a guard on the hollow towers. With the rising of the sun, the entire plain was taken, ready for the next assault. Others would already be preparing to cross the void to secure what had been won. But the hammers of Sigmar could not rest for long. Their task had long been ordained, and before the blood had cooled on the battlefield, they would be marching again. Only when the last of the enemy had been slain did Vandus return to the gate. By then he had given his Drakoth its head, allowing it to hunt freely, and now he walked across the earth in the manner of the rest of his Eternals, his footfalls sinking deep into the gore-rich soil. Ionis was waiting for him at the foot of the stone stairway, leaning heavily on his reliquary staff. The Cryptborn bowed as the Hammerhand approached, as did all the storm host present.
"So his faith in you was vindicated," said Ionis dryly. "In the end."
Vandus smiled. "You witnessed it. Did you doubt?"
"When I saw you fight like a callow youth, yes. Not at the conclusion. What ailed you?"
Vandus looked about him. The sheer despoilation still had the power to chasten. "This place," he said. "Though we were warned, there could be no preparing." Ionis grunted.
"That was why you were charged with forgetting. The reforging should have made you whole."
"And you then, Cryptborn? You have forgotten too?" Ionis let slip a harsh laugh.
"Well, we must both learn. There can be no going back."
"No, but there may be a second forging. For you and all the others." Vandus looked out over his army, their armor now streaked with blood and soiled with the mire of Akshi. "This was mine." The two of them began to walk up the long stone stairwell, Ionis limping heavily. Above them soared the arch of the gate, now glinting in the light of the world's sun. Age had been stripped away by the storm's wrath, and the artistry of its makers was revealed once more. In time, more than Eternals would come through that portal. Artificers and stonewrights would return, making good what had been laid low. This ground won was just a fragment of Akshi's vast expanse. They had established a mere pinprick of light against the swathe of darkness that ran off into every compass point. When those points of light were united, drawn together by the coming of many storm hosts, then the war would flourish in earnest. They both knew that other portals were under attack now. Some would succeed, carving new paths into the territory of the great enemy. Others would no doubt fail, though their valor would still be a testament to the God King's vision. This was just the start, the unfolding of a thousand battles that would sweep across lands long lost to despair.
"And what of Kul?"
asked Ionis, breathing heavily as he climbed. His wounds had been grave, and even the Lord Relictor would take time to recover from them. "He lives," said Vandus. "The shame of his survival will haunt him, just as mine did me." He looked out across the ruins. "He will return once his broken body has healed. We must be ready." Ionis nodded.
And so we will be.
Vandas said nothing of his vision then. The gate into the abyss, the pyramid of skulls. He would be compelled to in time, for already his mind was turning to the campaign to come. He would have to bend Ionis to his will before the storm host marched next, and that would not be easy. The two of them reached the summit of the stair. Above them soared the archway, now free of the fires that had raged across it. The air hummed with an actinic charge, and lightning still flickered around its edges, but only the deep bloodstains on the stone marked the true scale of what had taken place under its shadow. The air tasted of ashes, and the copper tang of blood underpinned it all. The great heaps of bone were visible in the distance, hazy in the dawn, and beyond them reared the faint outlines of greater towers. Ionis halted and shot him a wry smile.
You have tidings you wish to share, he said. But take a moment, Lord, to consider what has been done this night.
And just what has been done, Cryptborn? Asked Vandas, feeling the weariness of the long fight catch up with him at last. We are conquering a burned wasteland. Whatever evil we succeed in slaying, we come too late.
Perhaps, said Ionis. Perhaps not. Come, I have something to show you.
Throughout the night of horror, they had never moved. They had hugged the stone, burrowing down as if they could somehow tunnel their way out of harm's way. The sky itself had burned, riven with flames of both bronze and silver, and the rocks below had groaned and cracked. Of all the fears she had endured, that had been the very worst. Calja had long been resigned to her own life ending in bloodshed, but this was different. The world was ending, tipped on its axis, dissolving into a screaming vortex of madness. At the start, she had been glad to see the Blood Reavers retreat, but then she had seen what they were retreating from. The storm-born were demonkind, surely, thrown down from the fiery skies and sent to visit anguish on the mortals below. Their faces were horrific, golden masks that gave nothing away, and they bore enormous weapons of fire and steel. Each one was far taller than a man, and their voices were fell and strident. The others of the tribe had been shaking by then, locked down, caught between the gathering of armies too vast to comprehend. Their long flight across the delta had ended at the Hill of the Three Towers, and Calja's faint hopes of holding off their pursuers amid the ruins had at last been exposed. But then, slowly, the shape of the battle had changed. Calja had seen the demon kind take on the Blood Reavers, and after them the larger horde that had followed. All the fighting had been concentrated on the massive arch ruin, and the hillside where they sheltered was forgotten. They were not demons. She saw that as she had watched, half in terror, half in fascination. Though they inspired fear, it was not the mind-numbing dread of the Aetherborn, but a cleaner fear, one generated solely from their warlike mien and savage bearing. They were brave, astonishingly so, throwing themselves into the very centre of the great army that had followed them over the plains. For a long time they had been isolated and heavily outnumbered, surely destined to die below the ruins they were striving so valiantly to hold. And at one point she had got to her feet, ready to race down into the inferno to join her blade with theirs. Svan had pulled her back.
Are you mad? He had hissed. Leave them to slaughter each other.
But this had not been just another of the endless feuds between rival powers. This had been something new, something that no one had witnessed before. She had continued to watch, desperately urging the newcomers to prove their worth, even when it looked like their demise was imminent. When the gate had opened, and the second great host of gold had emerged through it, she had had to quash a cry of joy, burning up from inside and threatening to spill from her mouth. After that, the battle had raged with even more intensity. The storm had thundered and the lights had become blinding. She had not seen the end, for the noise and the element's torment had at last pushed her back down into the meagre protection of the stones about her, crouched like an infant, her hands clamped over her ears. Right at the end, though, when the hoard had finally been broken, there had been fighting at last. Some of the warlord's warriors had fled in their direction, and Calja and the others had taken up arms in their frozen fingers. She had killed one blood warrior, catching him unawares as he vaulted the walls. But then others had rounded on her, their blades glinting by the light of the fires. She had hissed a curse at them, and prepared to die with as much ferocity as she could muster, when one of the golden knights burst among them. His movements had been of a different order to those he fought. His warhammer had flown in a blur of speed, crushing and maiming with every bone-jarring hit. Those he had not slain quickly fled, limping off into the dark and carrying life-ending wounds. Then the masked killer had turned on Calja, his warhammer angled to end her too. She had been too shocked to move. As the rain had scythed down, she had stood stock still, her blunt knife dripping in her hand. The masked killer had hesitated, clearly unsure. Others of the tribe, scattered by the blood warrior's attack, had crept back, all of them gaping up at the newcomer, like her, too overwhelmed to intervene.
"If you are here to kill me,"
she had said, forcing the words out through fear-tight lips,
"then do so now."
On hearing the words, the gold-armored warrior had relaxed his grip on the hammer. He had fallen to one knee before her, bringing his head to a level with her own, studying her face intently. Calja had suffered the scrutiny, feeling wretched and filthy, set beside his splendor.
"You are whole," the warrior had said,
and his voice had been deeper and more resonant than anything she had ever heard. There had been something else there also. Astonishment, perhaps.
"By Sigma, you are whole."
Vandas listened to the mortal tell her tale, not interrupting until the end. Ionis stood beside him, as did Averin, the liberator who had discovered her. Smoke from the pyres drifted across the plains below them, a dirty brown that stained the overcast sky. The Lord Celestant tried to resist the urge to stare openly at her. Part of him was appalled by her very existence. She was a wretch, her bones protruding starkly, her rags hanging from a skeletal frame in layers of filth. For all that, she stood proudly before them, her shoulders pushed back, her fingers fidgeting at the knife hilt tied to her belt. There was defiance there. Once she finished speaking, he went up to her, falling to one knee as Averin had done. Even stooped, he was far taller than her, and set beside his war finery, she looked almost comically fragile.
"And yet," he thought, "they endured here throughout all the ages of darkness. Could we, with all our gifts, have done the same?" "What are you called?" he asked, speaking as gently as he could.
"I am named Calja," she said.
"How many of you are there?"
"Just what you see, Lord."
Less than 20 had survived the night, and all those who remained were sick and famished.
"And are there more out in the wilds?"
"How many, I know not. If others live, then they are hunted as we were."
Those words made him angry. These were the children of humanity, the last remnants of a once great people. For them to be chased down like beasts was the darkest of blasphemies that had been visited on this cursed land.
"Do you know what we are?" he asked.
The woman stared at him blankly. He might as well have asked her how best to compass the moon. She had known in her life nothing but the theology of dark gods, and the name of Sigmar had never been uttered in a mortal's hearing. The sigils he bore on his armor were as esoteric to her as the icons of chaos were to him. Seeing her confusion, he reached up and lifted his helm from his head. For the first time, she beheld him as he truly was. There was immediate recognition there, For although Vandus was an Eternal, changed and augmented by the powers of the Celestial Realm, his features were still those of a man.
"We are salvation," he told her. "We are the end to pain and the beginning of hope. While one of us draws breath, you will never be hunted again. We are the warriors of Sigma, and this is the dawn of his age."
Some of what he said made no sense to her, but the tone of his words clearly struck home, for a line of tears ran down her grimy cheek. For an instant, Vandus was reminded of the old image, the one he had cherished even in the midst of the lamplit halls of Sigmaron. When she had smiled, he remembered, her dark eyes had held the light of stars. He might have pressed Kalja further then. Perhaps, if the fates had allowed it, he would have discovered that she was some scion of a tribe he had known. Maybe of even the Diabrands themselves. He almost asked her, for her defiant face was so familiar, so redolent of the one he had known. But the question died on his lips. He had passed the test amid the fires of war and would not tread that path again. It mattered not where this human came from, nor what blood ran in her veins. She was a daughter of Sigmar, and her survival alone was surety that the return to the realms was not made in vain.
"Then,"
she asked, looking unsteady on her feet,
"are the wars over?"
A desperate hope was burning in her brown eyes, one that vied with exhaustion. She had been taken to the very edge of extinction, as had all her people, though Cryptborn assured him she would survive. Vandus would have loved to have told her that they were over. But here, in this place, the first reunion between those who had been left and those who had returned, she deserved the truth.
"When all is accomplished, they will be," he said. "From this day forth, every last tithe of strength will be spent to reconquer what was lost, and to hold it, and to rebuild anew."
Then his faint smile faded, for he could still smell the ashes of burning, and knew that the bloodshed of the past night was but a foretaste of what was to come, in this and every other mortal realm.
"But for now,"
he said, never letting his eyes leave hers,
"I tell you truly, they are only just beginning."